The launch of the station was actually initiated, John, by RTE. And now what RTE had done at the time is to, we said, to combat the onslaught of the pirates. They decided to put what's called, they call a community radio station, a temporary community radio station, into and travel around it from area to area. And they came to Yall, and they first of all, when they came to Yall, they looked around for people, we'd say, that would be well got in the community, basically. And they had a kind of a public meeting as such, and they threw this idea, RTE themselves threw this idea out to the people, to say, onto this public meeting, to say, look, we're going to bring a radio station here for a day, or for a week. And they, things rested so, and they brought it for a week. Now, what they had, basically, was a small portable studio and a remote transmitter. And they broadcast it, we say, from the studio on VHF, and they had a remote transmitter then up in the hill in medium wave. And this went on for a week. And, of course, everybody participated in this for a week. It was a huge thing in the town for a week. But the trouble about it is, when it went, it left a void. And there was actually four of us got together and decided, look, well, would we chance a radio station? Now, I had experience of working with radio in the stations in Cork, in the pirate radio stations in Cork, such as Cork City Radio, Cork Broadcasting Company. There were pirate stations in Cork. And in the 70s, in 76, 77, I was working with them, building transmitters and doing maintenance for them at the time. So we got together and we decided to put a radio station on air here. Now, at the time, radio, pirate radio, was frowned upon by the authorities. It was a kind of an open secret. It was a kind of a thing that, everybody just, the law was bent and people took no notice of it and they were doing no harm,
Yeah.
Now, I think, in the Dublin and the Cork situation, the point about it, they were getting very, very big. You had stations like ARD in Dublin and you had Radio Dublin with huge transmitters that were transmitting practically halfway around the country and back into England. And, they were getting, there was pressure coming, we'd say, from the British Isles and from Europe as regards trying to alleviate these pirates, we say, from the interference point of view. But here, we said, the government at the time kind of took a view of it, look, they were doing no harm, and as long as they were small, and basically not
interfering.
Not interfering with anybody. It was a kind of, they were springing up. And basically, these stations were springing up all over the country. And RTE themselves were practically responsible, I suppose, even though it kind of backfired on them in a way, because they were responsible for setting up a lot of the small pirate stations, certainly here in Yall, and certainly in West Cork, and certainly in Waterford, and in Tipperary, and in Kilkenny, and Carlow, and right up along the line, any small communities that they went to. Because they did travel around the place with this, community radio station wagon,
And was it hard to drum up support locally then, or was the support already there thanks to RTE? Was it hard to get a schedule together and to get enough people to get a decent service on air?
Not really, because when we actually started this, we actually started for a run for fun. And I always say, look, that we started on the 4th of July, 1979, and I went in there just for a weekend or for a week just to see how it would go,
Yeah.
And we were no sooner on the air, and the community embraced us. There was people coming to us. Look, I'd like to do something here. I'd like to do something there. We started getting community notices. We got a notification from the local council that would we broadcast council meetings, that kind of thing. We got huge support. The Gardaí were coming to us with, road closures, etc., that kind of thing. So very early on, and we were absolutely amazed with this.
Yeah, you had a couple of interesting references in the documentary. We heard an extract from it earlier about politicians gradually becoming more involved in the station, starting with councillors and then eventually TDs. There was a little bit of worry, I suppose, on the part of elected representatives to be seen to be endorsing pirate radio. But once they realised that it was important and that it mattered and that it had meaning and power, they started to get involved.
Oh, of course, because it provided a local platform for any local TD that was running for council or whatever the case may be. It provided a local platform, and they wouldn't get that local platform anywhere in the country. They embraced this, and they really came on board with it. And they had no scruples about these pirate stations being illegal. And I think that was repeated all over the country, John, you know.
I think there were cases in other situations where some politicians were disciplined for going on air and things by their party headquarters, but I don't think that that applied in your case, from what you say.
Not really. No, we never heard of anybody, any politician being disciplined. And I suppose if they were disciplined, they just got a rap on the knuckle and said, look, don't do it again kind of thing, or whatever the case may be. But basically, you know, it wasn't open secret where these stations were located. And as I say, that's the politicians, especially the local politicians, that were running for the local councils, which were in vogue at the time, they really took it on board, you know.
You mentioned earlier on the Gardaí giving you local notices. Were you ever actually raided by the Gardaí, as many pirate stations were?
No, and I tell you, I think the real reason was, you see, up to the time we came on the air on the 4th of July 1979, but up to that, a lot of the stations, 90% of the stations right around the country, were just basically playing wall-to-wall music, you know, and they were catering with, in the big towns or big cities. But we were one of the first with the rural stations. We were appealing to a rural community. You see, now, in a way, I suppose we're kind of in the border between Cork and Waterford, so we appeal to both rural communities. And what we found, that the rural communities really embraced the idea of local radio, you know. And again, I suppose, at the time, and even it still prevails today, John, that local radio is all about identification, or community radio is all about identification, because we've seen it of late now, we said the demise of the local post offices, and so much has been taken out of the rural community that, you know, the rural community has the local station to fall back in. And again, they can identify with what the presenter is talking about, and you'll probably find the same thing yourself up there, you know.
And you had a number of flagship programmes that, again, are mentioned in the documentary, programmes that were kind of early outside broadcasts and sitting in people's kitchens, doing recordings in housing estates around Youghal and going to pubs in the general West Waterford and East Cork area. Can you tell us about some of those highlights in the early years of the pirate station?
Well, one of the programmes, as you mentioned there, one of the programmes was a presenter, we say, taking a small Moran's tape recorder out, we say, local estates. Now, what he would do is he'd go to one of the local estates maybe a couple of days beforehand, and he'd talk to maybe somebody living in the estate and said, look, if it's all right, we'd like to do a programme from your place. I'd like to do a programme from your place. If you can gather a couple of the neighbours around the place, we'll just go into the kitchen, sit down, have a cup of tea, very relaxed, informative atmosphere, and go down, sit down, and talk to the residents, we say, in the estates about their problems, their unemployment problems, you know, council infrastructure in the estate, that kind of thing, you know, and unemployment and, you know, work-related issues. And he was mostly talking to housewives, we say, in the estates. Now, this was a groundbreaking programme because it basically brought radio, not alone, we said, to the small towns like Youghal, but it brought radio into the estates itself. And it gave people in the estates a voice. They would never have a voice otherwise, you know. This was one of the programmes, and I think it was a programme that was way, way ahead of its time. This was being done now in 1979, 1980 by our presenters here, you know. The other programme you mentioned actually was a Pair and Newton Tour. Now, the name of it actually was Pair Mulcahy was one of the presenters, and there was a chap here called Kennefic, and his name was Newt Kennefic, and he was a bit of a character.
That's a strange name. Was that a nickname?
That was a nickname.
Yeah.
You know that was actually his nickname. William Kennefic was his name, okay. But nobody knew him as William, and he was actually a retired fisherman. But he had the gift of the gab, and he had a wonderful personality, and he was from the town. He knew everybody in the town. Now, the whole idea of the programme was that if you were bringing somebody into a studio with lights and, we'd say, microphones and screens and the whole lot in front of them like we do now, people would feel very, very intimidated by that.
Yes, of course.
So his idea was to bring the radio out to the local guy in the pub. He's sitting down there, he has maybe a pint in front of him or whatever the case may be, and he's sitting down among his friends, and he'll talk for Ireland, and he'll relay all the stories and the history of the whole lot. And again, we would go out to this particular, we'd say, public house, and we would talk to the publican maybe a week before and say, look, will you line up six of your best guests on the programme. And we will call on a Monday night, because it was always done on a Monday night when the pubs were fairly slack, okay. You know. And we go in on a Monday night and we record that. Now, the equipment we had actually was very minimal. All we had is a public address amplifier, tape recorder, two loudspeakers, two microphones, and off we'd go. But a funny thing, actually, a lot of the publicans thought, because radio at the time, a lot of people, I suppose, didn't know the value of community radio. They didn't know the value, we'd say, of local radio at all. So a lot of the publicans thought that when we'd walk in with this gear, they'd say, is that all you have? Where are the lights? Where are the cameras? Where's all this kind of thing, you know? But there were some wonderful programmes recorded on that, and some wonderful anecdotes of people that are now well gone. But this programme, it had run for about maybe 2 to 3 years, and we did all the pubs in East Cork and West Waterford. Now, I think nowadays, looking at it actually, it's very unlikely that that could be repeated, I suppose, with the drink driving laws and the whole lot, and you wouldn't get that. But a lot of the time, actually, the pubs used to be packed for the programme, and then again, the programme used to go out on a Wednesday, and it used to be about roughly an hour and a half long, but the programme used to go out on a Wednesday, and the pub would be packed for the Wednesday, and the whole programme itself would go out Sunday at 12 o'clock, and the pub would be packed again, you know? For that, like, so...
Okay, so they'd be packing into the pubs to listen to it as
well?
They'd
be packing into the pubs. Okay. At one stage, actually, you know, at one stage, actually, the public, in some cases, the public had to issue tickets and say, look, okay, pre-book your seat.
Right, just to listen to the show, not only for the recording.
And to see the lads in operation, like.
Yeah.
Because, as I say, it was bringing radio, it was shattering the myth of radio and the technical side of the radio. It was bringing the radio right into the people's, we say, domain themselves, you know.
And you mentioned how simple the technical setup was for recording. What was the transmission setup like? Presumably you were medium wave only in the early years before going on to FM as well, or did you ever have FM as well as medium wave?
No, what we did actually, we had, we started off with medium wave. We started off in 202 metres medium wave.
That's about 1458 kilohertz, I think.
Yeah, we started off in that, and what we used to have, actually, at night time, a funny thing, actually, at night time, we used to change our frequency to 199 metres. And the reason being is we used to do nighttime programmes from around maybe 11 o'clock until about maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, this is back in the pirate days now. And we used to change frequency for those. The reason being is that on a frequency of 199 metres, there was a station in North Africa, Jeddah. And that just broadcast, I think, was something like, 3 or 4 megawatts right around Europe. And
okay.
Practically half around the world on 199 metres. But for some peculiar reason, this station used to close down, turn off that transmitter at 11 o'clock and resume it at 3 o'clock. And we cottoned onto the idea that if we started transmitting on 199 metres at 11 o'clock at night, that we had a free band practically all over the world, and we would get... hopefully we would get saturation of far-flung places. Now, what we did this, the first couple of weeks we did it, we started to get letters from all over the world, DXers, you know, anoraks, radio anoraks, for want of a better word, that we said they would be listening out for these stations. And we started to get hundreds of letters from all over the world.
How far away were they coming from?
They were coming from Russia, they were coming from Buenos Aires, they were coming from Australia, they were coming from all over the world.
And what power were you putting into the transmitter?
All we were putting out at the time, it was 25 watts.
How did you get so far with just 25 watts?
It's what it is, actually. It's a thing called, at the time, on the winter's evening, around maybe November, October, November, December, the sporadic E, if I may call it, the sporadic E level was very, very high, and it would reflect the signal practically all over the world. It was a hit and miss affair, basically, you know. But you would transmit practically all over the world on a very low frequency.
And your 202 metres then, your main transmitter, was that just for daytime then?
Just for daytime.
And how far would you be getting that signal?
When we started off, of course, like, renovating was ongoing. Like, we started off with a power of 25 watts, then we increased up to 50 watts, then we increased up to 150 watts, and then we decided to purchase an old ex-BBC transmitter from the north, you know, 1 kilowatt transmitter. Now, we couldn't run it as a kilowatt, obviously, but we ran it at about maybe 600 or 700 watts, you know. No, again, as it was like the aerials we had were completely, at a time like everything was homemade, the aerials were completely deficient. I reckon if we had the right aerial, we'd probably cover half the south of Ireland with it, you know?
Yeah.
But at the time, we covered into Middleton and we covered down to Dungarvan, covered a bit, 18, 19 miles, that kind of thing, you know?
So your main listenership area went right into West Waterford and up as far as towns like Middleton and Cork, as you say.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, as I say, Middleton, you know, a radius of about 18, 19 miles, that kind of thing, you know?
Okay. And to come then to the closure of CRY, Noel, on the 31st of December 1988, we've covered this date many times on this programme before, a landmark day in Irish radio history. Can you tell us about your memories of the close down of the pirate CRY and how you felt on that night?
Well, it was a very emotional night for us. Because we were after moving from our premises, when we started up in an attic above by the Godfings in the high part of the town here in Eileen Connolly's farmhouse. We started off there, and we were about maybe 2 to 3 years there, I'd say, when we got the idea to move down into the main street. Now, when we moved down into the main street, we had a small 5-watt VHF transmitter, you see, and we transmitted that then up into the Godfings. So we kept the medium wave on the Godfings, but we were also around the town on, we say, 4 or 5 watts FM. Now, again, we were in town at the time, and I said, when the date came, and of course it was well publicised, the 31st of December 1988, that a lot of the pirates would voluntarily go off the air, and if they didn't, they had stood no chance of a licence. So we said, look, we will go off the air. And it was a very emotional night for us, because at that stage we were part of the community, we were firmly ensconced in the community, and I remember a couple of days afterwards, like it was like a death in the town, since 1979 the town had a voice, and East Cork and West Waterford had a voice. Now they hadn't, you know, and to the old story, you never miss the water till the well run dry. We were on the inside looking out. We were on the inside of the radio looking out. But we didn't realise the power we had, or we didn't realise what it meant to people until we actually went off the air.
You probably didn't think that it would take so long for the community radio licensing process to happen.
We didn't, you see. And the point about it, like, is the, like, to be quite fair to the BAA, at the IRTC at the time, when they were set up, they advertised the franchises. And to tell you the truth, like, is they actually went on a fact-finding course to America and to Australia, and the Australians and the Americans told them in no uncertain terms that anything under 7 million people, you wouldn't, it wasn't worth broadcasting to, you know. That was the response that they got back, like, but they were scratching their heads saying, look, we have to fulfil a need. We have to serve the county stations. Of course, then they started up, they started Sanctuary Radio. And surprise, surprise, Sanctuary Radio went belly up in them, you know. And then they looked, the rest of the stations then, like, Cork and Waterford and regional stations, they were bringing on county stations then, and they were allowing franchises for them, you see, to come through. But the community section was very, very far down on their list. Very, very far down. And they didn't really, to tell you the truth, they didn't know. And to be quite honest, to be quite fair to them, they weren't aware, basically, of the huge input that community radio would have. And after a while, when they did get their act together, when they did start looking at it in 1993, 1994, they did start looking at community radio, and they said, okay, and they appointed a liaison officer there for community radio there. Kieran Cassan was appointed. And I have to say, Kieran was a godsend to him, because Kieran worked at the pirate radio in Dublin, and he had an idea of, we'd say, basically what community radio was. So they advertised 6 franchises around the country at the time, and we were one of the lucky ones, actually, to get a licence in 1995, you know.
And do you think, did that gap of 6 years, Noel, did you lose a lot of the momentum in terms of the people who were interested in radio in the town? It was a very long time to have no radio station after such a long history of radio in Youghal.
Well, I think we did lose a certain amount of people, but I'm glad to say a lot of the people, 75% of the people came back to us again, you know. you know, they actually came back and they never lost the, they never lost the love of broadcasting. And more 75% of them came back, you know. But a funny thing, what we did find actually, that in the intervening years, that the concept of radio had changed from, we'd say, the pirate days to, we'd say, the start of the licensing to start in 1995. I had found that the concept of radio had completely changed. Naturally, technology had moved on. There were so many things that actually happened, and people's tastes changed as well. So what we did find was that we were gone from being basically, I suppose, a town station. And then when I say predominantly in the town, we were gone from kind of a station that was predominantly in the town to a much wider field. And we found that the idea, we basically found that people, when we came back in 1995, people embraced the idea of it, you know, again. So it was a fair transition period between 1988 and 1995, you know.
And how would you compare, just to finish up, Noel, how would you compare the current station in Yall, the current CRY, with the pirate years, with the pirate station?
Well, basically, I suppose back in the pirate days, look, it was a case of, look, to be quite honest, it was baling twine and barbed wire that kept the whole lot together. Nowadays, it's completely different, you know. Technology has come on, as we all know, in leaps and bounds. And, you know, what we had to cobble together years ago with television valves and bits of coils of wire and this, that, and the other thing, and everything was homemade in the pirate days. Nowadays, it's so sophisticated as all the equipment will practically talk to you, you know. And as well as that, the programs are after getting more sophisticated because, as I say, people's tastes out there, people's tastes are becoming more sophisticated as well.